Hey listeners, Chloe here. If you need to stay as up to date with the latest developments and innovations in the luxury industry as I do, you need to dive into Vogue Business. It's your ticket to a global perspective on fashion and beauty, delivering exclusive insights that will give you the edge in this competitive, dynamic industry. Just visit VogueBusiness.com today and use the code RUN20 at checkout to join the Vogue Business community. That's VogueBusiness.com, promo code RUN20. Don't miss out. This is The Run Through. I'm Chloe Mal, and I brought back two of our beloved friends who have been really steering the ship for the last few weeks.
Hi.
Hello. I don't know. I was like, we're jumping out from the corner and yelling surprise.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm Jose Criado Zunzueta.
I'm Laia Garcia Furtado.
We just couldn't live without them this week.
Period. We're happy to report we didn't break anything.
I know. I was going through withdrawals this week, so this is really helpful.
Yeah. It's soothing us out.
I'm like, oh no, there's all of these headlines to talk about.
What did you have to talk about?
Well, mostly just like, you know, just the continuation of uncuffing season, which we talked about last week,
and
we don't need to, but I just kept thinking like, wow, we were right.
Everyone's you were getting on divorced.
We were on it. Yeah. But what are some things that actually did happen this week?
Beyonce and Taylor Swift controlled the traffic.
Yeah, wait. Tell us more about that, because I did think it was kind of amazing that both of them, the same week.
It's kind of iconic. So both of them, as you'll probably know based on your TikTok or Instagram feeds, have massive concerts going on, right? Mm-hmm. So Taylor Swift has the Eras Tour and Beyonce has Renaissance World Tour. And last week, it was reported that Taylor gave
$100,000 bonuses to all the truck drivers on the tour.
Which is incredible. And then Beyonce had a concert in the D.C. area earlier this week, and it went over time. And I think the metro closes, I think, at midnight or something like that. So she covered the additional $100,000 cost to run more trains, keeping all 98 stations open for customers. So they could go back home after Renaissance.
It's like, it's not even the cost of it all, because of course.
It's the flex.
It's
but
the flex.
Like, did somebody...
I think what apparently happened is that there was a storm that had to have them, like, shelter in place, which is why the concert started late and it went, like, later than it should have ended.
Who has...
Who texted like, Beyonce?
If I needed to call the head of the MTA right now to say, hey... You know,
can
keep
I Venmo
the L train,
you?
Can I, keep the L
can I
train
cash
running
you
for a weekend.
K.
Who would I call?
Also, how do you know it's 100,000? I have so many questions.
Yes, and we might not ever get answers.
We will never get answers.
But what was the amazing line in Barbie?
There's
okay.
I think this is like.
Please, nobody cancel Jose or Chloe or anyone here. We're just reporters of culture.
This is just funny.
A reflection of culture.
There's that iconic line in Barbie where Gloria, a.k.a. America Ferrera's daughter, calls Barbie, a.k.a. Margot Robbie, a fascist. And then Margot, a.k.a. Barbie, goes outside and cries in her beautiful pink cowboy outfit. And she's just like, how can I be a fascist? I don't control the traffic or the flow of commerce. Well, Beyonce and Taylor Swift do control the traffic.
They sure do.
And the flow
Not,
of commerce.
No, the flow of commerce.
Because these tours are keeping a lot of people employed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I always feel like it's a little goofy to talk about the female dollar.
Yeah.
But it is kind of an amazing moment this summer of Beyonce, Taylor, and now Greta Gerwig with Barbie
exactly.
and Margot. Like, it's incredible.
It's incredible. And I think it's sort of like, you know, I feel like every time there is like a big film by a female director, like the last time it happened, I think it was like Chloe Zhao with The Eternals, right?
Yeah.
People are like, oh my God, look, turns out that like, you know, female directors or like female-led stories with like Captain Marvel or like any movie really can actually like drive people to film. I'm like, why is this news?
Yeah. I mean, this really, because there's this sort of accepted notion in Hollywood that women will spend money to go to more male-centric films, but men will not spend money to go to ladies' films.
Yes.
And Barbenheimer really busted that open.
Most certainly did.
I don't know. I think it's a very exciting
moment. I think it's just a really cool story overall.
Jose, you had a fun assignment last minute this weekend.
Yes. So.
And I actually discovered it on your Instagram, and you made me like chuckle out
loud. I have
loud.
So many questions.
Tell us what I'm talking about.
So this is a story. Saturday morning, Sabato De Sarno, who is the new creative director of Gucci, who's first collection will debut in Milan in September, aka next month. He announced the first phase of his first campaign for Gucci, which was a high jewelry campaign. He dropped a picture and just a cute little caption, and it's Daria Werbowy.
I think it is Werbowy.
English is like a language speaker. A lot of things sound weird in my mind. Anyway, so Daria, who we all know as this like iconic arts model, right?
Yeah, how old do we think Daria is? That's Daria?
Daria's like, what, 39? But she is the face of Gucci. What's funny about this is that everyone thought that she was going to be the face of Phoebe Philo.
Well, that was the big news, I thought.
Because this is
such a curveball.
Mm-hmm.
So Phoebe Philo, former Celine designer, Chloe designer, launching her own line. Also in September. Everyone's been waiting for the comeback of Daria because towards, I think, the latter eight. I don't think it was always, but I feel like towards the latter years of her at Celine, like, Daria was basically, like, the Phoebe Philo, like, stand-in.
Because she is, like, a doppelganger. Like, they look very similar.
Yeah. So the whole time we've been like, oh my God, if Phoebe's returning, that means Daria is returning.
Yes.
So
because Daria's been retired.
Yeah, she retired in 2016. She started in 2003.
Like Cork, Ireland, right?
She's just like straight vibing.
Yeah, she's vibing. She retired in 2016, but like fully retired. Not like the other girls that are like, I'm never coming back. And then a year later, they're like the face
of something. Because the thing about her is like, she was definitely like almost too cool for model. And she's like, yeah, I model, but like I, you know, care about science or something. I don't know. You can't do both.
She like
you know
fully
I mean.
Walked away from everything. But I thought this was great. Obviously, the conversation that morning was like, oh my God, why is it not with Phoebe? Like, do they even like know each other? Like,
she
probably got
Phoebe
like a
must
massive.
Be mad,
oh yeah,
key.
But she, you know, the conversation online was kind of like, oh, Daria was probably like enticed by a lot of zeros. Then
aren't there non-competes? I mean, who's made
I'm
this
sure
agreement?
There has to be one. What happened then is that Savato posted after posting in his caption with the original with the campaign photo that David Sims took, he was like, oh, we've known each other since we both started in the business in 2003. TLDR, what actually happened is that Daria's first main season was for the fall 2003 season. That was also the time where she fronted the Prada fall winter 2003 campaign. At around the same time, Savato started his career in the business working at Prada. So they probably both met back then as babies. To further the fact that, like, they have actually known each other for so long, Savato sent posted a photo that we also, like, posted on Instagram as Vogue Runway.
His receipt.
Yes.
Of them literally 20 years ago. Like, him now has, like, a buzz cut with, like, tons of, like, hair, beautiful curly hair. She has her brows bleached.
Oh, and her hair is, like, nuts, too.
And it's, like, it's a printout of a photo.
Yeah.
It's like an iconic receipt.
It's like he took a picture with his phone of a picture that he's
exactly.
had for years.
And it's giving, by the way, I got here first.
Yeah. In other news, can you guys tell me a little bit? I saw a headline that UK stylists are unionizing. What does that mean? Because to me, I feel like stylists they work across so many different kinds of types of styling and circumstance. I don't know. It just seems like not a universal.
No. This is very much an extension of a strike, you know, of the writer's strike and everything. And I think specifically it's like celebrity stylists that are unionizing.
Interesting.
And I think the guy that started it, Michael Miller, he is a celebrity
Who does
stylist.
He style?
I think it's very much related to that. And I get it. You know, they get paid. Like, it's like you get paid $500
a
look, for example, and you have to pay for all of the expenses yourself, which in styling is like literally a bajillion dollars.
Yeah,
because
you're like
you have
traveling.
To pay for messengers,
sure.
You have to pay for DHL, you have to pay for fittings, for tailors, like all of this stuff. So, you know, a $500 flat fee doesn't actually cover anything. It's
right.
like it's
yeah.
like
you're operating at a
you
loss.
May as well get monopoly money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that's super interesting. And I think it makes a lot of sense where he's basically being like, you know, if they just put us in their contracts,
right,
then which is true. And, you know, stylists, especially these days, have like it's so much power in just like somebody can completely change the way that the public sees them just
I mean,
by
we
whatever
just saw
they
wear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I will say what's also interesting about this is that, like, based on what you were just saying, Chloe, like, styling is such a, like, a almost like a blanket job in the sense that it covers so many things, right? It goes, yes, it starts with celebrity, but it's, like, is it just a red, like it goes from red carpet to like some celebrities aren't even styled like on their day to day. Like if they're traveling somewhere, they get styled to the airport.
Well, Kay Young said that it'll be written into like a studio contract airport looks.
It has to. Yeah. Like there's no other way, right? But I think what's interesting about this is that like you sort of, in a sense, styling is such, it's a very new career path. Yeah. And I have so many friends that are trying to start a stylist or like, you know, sort of like figuring out their way into becoming stylists. And it's a very informal gig, right? So I think the unionizing of it all, I think it's positive because it starts to sort of formalize a lot of these things that are very loose.
And I think also, you know, just fashion with fashion stylists in general.
Yeah.
Like that's, because that's a, like, magazine or whatever, editorial stylist, I guess.
Because also imagine, like, a stylist strike.
I mean, a lot of girlies would be crying on the streets.
A lot of people would be scared. Like, you know what
celebrities
I mean?
Celebrities would not be seen.
No.
It would just be, like, it would be like a Twilight Zone. Like,
it would
you
be
wake
like
up
the
one
90s.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Exactly.
Yeah, but that was...
that I don't think people have that kind of style anymore.
No.
Also, you I mean, I was late to work this morning because I couldn't decide what to wear.
It happens. Yeah.
And my friend works at Thom Browne, and I was like, I wonder what it would feel like to have a uniform every day.
It's like, yeah, remember when you were in school?
I was, and I hated my uniform, and now I realize.
Oh, I liked it. I love a uniform.
I love my school uniform.
I miss a uniform.
Sometimes when I like used to see like Tawny and Grace and Phyllis Posnick walking around like in their uniform, I was like, I wish I had like the confidence to just come in to that. But maybe you have to be 60 plus.
And an icon.
Yeah. Like, but I think you can still have like a uniform. I feel like I take from them the sort of like the building blocks.
Yeah.
You know, like Virginia always wears like
a
wide leg trouser.
A gray trouser.
Like a good sandal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so in my head, I'm like, okay, skirts.
Yeah.
You have building blocks like big shirt, big jacket, big pant.
It's giving categories triple XL.
Yeah. That's because Jose likes to feel petite.
Exactly. I love feeling petite. I love a tent. speaking of tent, actually, speaking of uniforms and things to buy.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I just felt like there were two very interesting articles this week about how people, women are still, even though like half of the magazines we used to read when we were bibbies don't exist anymore. Women still want to know what to buy and from people who they trust. And so there's a New York Times article about how newsletters and Substacks are the new magazines.
Yeah.
And then Lauren Sherman at Puck sort of reiterated that and filled that out a bit. And I thought there were – it was – she was very right. And it's interesting that these women with their affiliate links are making a lot of money. And there's what pushing product. Like the one thing that stuck out in Lauren's column was that – she mentioned a friend's small shoe brand was put on a shopping guide of an online magazine, and it didn't say it sold like four pairs of shoes. But then it was also mentioned on Becky Malinsky's great newsletter, Five Great Things, which she sort of each week gives a very curated list of five things to buy. And apparently that made that shoe sell out within like a week. And it's just fascinating the power of personal recommendation.
Yeah.
Do you guys? How many Substacks do you guys subscribe to?
Not many. I subscribe to Becky, Hunter Harris, which is not a
Hunter
fashion
Harris
one.
Is like,
but
it's so funny.
Essential.
Yeah.
And, oh, and Magazine, the other one. Or Magasin.
Yeah.
Magasin. The Laura Riley
one. I didn't know
one.
About Magasin. Who is Laura Riley and what is that?
You know, I think she's like a cutie. Actually, I think I came across Laura Riley through Rachel Tashon's Opulent Tips.
Okay.
Which is one of my Bibles.
The, yeah, and one of the OG, like, email, because that's a subscription-only news email, not newsletter.
Yeah.
But I think maybe she linked out to her once. I think Laura does, like, she also does really great shopping curation, but, you know, it's more like, here is a weird pair of, like, Bless wrap jeans that you could get on the Essence sale. Anyway, you were going to say about...
No, I was just going to say, what's interesting to me about all of this is that, like, at the beginning... this was such a huge thing for magazines, but also because of the editor, right? Like, you kind of wanted to see what your editor, like, what your predilected editor was recommending. And now you see it, like, with these people that are, like, maybe some of them used to be editors or writers, some of them are influencers, some of them are, like, somewhere in between. But that's what's interesting to me. At the end of the day, it's still almost like a personal recommendation. It's just repackaged.
Yeah.
And I think it has a lot to do with, like, our collective obsession with the idea of community. You prefer a signature by someone's name other than like a byline in a magazine because that almost makes you feel like you're part of a more curated mm-hmm. or more specific community. I mean, it's interesting. I will say I'm not an affiliate link girly. Like, I don't look up, like, what's the pot I should buy, right? And I, like, go over, like, a listicle of, like, the 20 best pots and, like, sold on Amazon or whatever. I will say Rachel's Opulent Tips.
Oh, Rachel Tashin's Opulent Tips.
It's so
total delight.
Good.
The
so
headline,
good.
It actually made me open it on vacation because the headline was glassware that would make Proust cry.
Yes.
But it's an
authority.
Yeah, it's like, an authority, exactly.
It's women, all the ones we've mentioned are women.
Yeah.
Who we know mostly from another, it's not like new names in our life. Mm-hmm. It's women who we followed their careers and we trust them as industry experts. Like for me, Becky Malinsky's been a market editor for so long. Mm-hmm. But also a writer, and she just has such a easy sort of fluency with like, what's good, but not in a fussy sort of pretentious mm-hmm. way. Yeah. And I have to say, like last weekend, 5 great work pants, I was like going through them. I didn't buy anything, but I was like, oh, these Maria McManus trousers.
Yeah.
Maybe that's my row alternative. Mm-hmm. And it just, there's something much more conversational. It feels like I'm at a coffee with a friend who knows what she's talking about shopping-wise rather than
And I think because flipping. You know of these women enough, you also like feel like their lifestyles are a little bit more understandable or at least more like approachable to us.
One thing that's interesting is that, you know, the way that the Times framed the article being like the new fashion magazines. But I think in a way, like a lot of these women have authority from also having
a fashion magazine.
You know what I mean? Like, we trust you because we know that your work experience sort of, you know, your work experience is like your receipt mm-hmm. that you know what you're
exactly.
talking about.
Yeah.
Anyway, fashion magazines forever.
Lucky Magazine, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
R.I.P. Lucky Magazine.
It is, honestly. Yeah. It is Lucky Magazine.
It is Lucky Magazine.
It's totally, Lucky Magazine, even in style for another. But I just have such strong memories of, like, just licking my finger, rifling through Lucky Magazine in college. Like,
can we talk about Lucky Magazine had stickers?
Yes!
So you could mark each page. Like, that was so genius.
Yes.
That was very cute.
Kim France apparently has a...
She has a podcast, too.
I don't know. I just read about it in the Times thing that apparently she has a sub. Is it just a podcast or that was
maybe
a
she has both?
It's both.
I think it's a
Substack
for ladies over 50?
50.
Yeah,
yeah.
I thought it was ladies over 40, and I was like, oh my god, that's almost me.
Anyway, so love Kim France. Shout out Kim France.
Shout out Kim France.
The Run Through will be back in just a moment.
I'm Molly Sims.
And I'm Emisha Gormley.
We are two best friends with one common obsession.
Beauty.
And by that, we mean everything that makes you look
and feel
beautiful. We tried it all and we've got your back. We'll be calling on all our favorite health experts, industry insiders, and friends to answer all your beauty questions. Consider us your beauty 411 and sometimes your 911.
From how to fix brassy hair
to the pros and cons of laser facials
and always with a cocktail in hand.
Always. So be prepared to be obsessed. Check out Lipstick on the Rim wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Maybe a chef-grade range made you want to hone your cooking skills, or a high-tech tennis racket made you want to work on your backhand. I recently bought a new pair of running shoes, and that made me love hitting the pavement again. Well, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
And we're back with the run-through. Today, we have Naomi Elizé on the show. Naomi is a market editor at Vogue and a podcaster and one of the best talent scouts for up-and-coming designers that we know. We wanted to chat with Naomi about many things, one of which was her own podcast called So What Do You Do Again? That highlighted women of color in the fashion industry and was host to one such guest as Cho Minotti. And that is a fabulous episode that everyone should listen to. But we also wanted to talk to Naomi about navigating work-life balance, which is something we don't talk about very often because in the last couple of years, Naomi has lost both of her parents and really struggled with how to juggle that with her job and take care of herself. And it was great to hear from her a little bit. Who are the exciting designers that she's watching right now?
Well, welcome, Naomi. We are so excited to talk to you. We've actually, I feel like as a group, been talking about you coming on for like 6 months. So we're very excited to have you
finally
here.
I'm honored. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and it was lovely because I remember you had your own podcast and you invited me on to your podcast.
I listened to that this weekend and it was so fun, mostly because I feel like I learned all these things about Choma that I didn't know.
Whoa, what did you learn about me?
I was like crying listening about your first childhood memory being these patent leather Mary Janes. It's like
all true.
I mean, the most inspiring and also the best event
with white frilly socks.
White frilly socks.
Oh my god! Yes. Yeah, the dream. I love hearing you talk about your dad's style, and I mean, I was shocked by his Choma's father when he moved to the UK as a student was. So particular about the kind of coat he was going to buy. It needed to be a really high quality, eventually a cashmere jacket, that he went without a coat for his first British winter and got tuberculosis.
Yes, oh my he did. God. Yes,
I mean, that is, did. It's like an O. Henry story of like, good grief.
commitment to quality. A little bit too much. Too much commitment to quality.
Taking it to another level.
Yes.
Thank you. Naomi, can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what your job entails?
Yes. So my name is Naomi Elize. I am a Haitian woman from South Florida. I am a market editor at Vogue, and I know a lot of people tend to get confused as to what a market editor actually does.
Yep.
So usually my usual spiel is I like to just say I am a liaison between the brands, the designers, and the stylists. So let's say Alex Harrington is shooting another cover for us. And
Alex
Harrington is a
stylist at Vogue.
And does a lot of our cover shoots, a lot of our editorials. And if he wants Miu Miu look 3, he's going to get look 3. And I will be emailing them, contacting them, and doing whatever I need to do to get that look in the office at the proper time. But other than that, it's a lot about building and maintaining relationships. And that includes going to the market appointments, the press appointments, your dinners, your events.
First of all, I feel like people are always asking me, like, what on earth is a market editor? So thank you for explaining that. And two, there's different markets.
Yes.
So what does that look like? And how are those split amongst the fashion team?
So I work closely with Mae Morse, who is my colleague. And so I handle the French and British markets. So let's say Miu Miu shows in Paris, so I will take Miu Miu, and then Mae does the American and the Italian market. So Proenza Sculler, that falls under her market.
So that's interesting. It's the market depends on where they show.
Yeah.
That's so, where, Miu Miu, to me, I think it was an Italian brand.
Right, because of Prada. But since they show in Paris, I take it on.
Okay.
But it gets a little muddled sometimes. And I'll look at Mae like, do I do this or do you? Like, what? We're just like, whoever
wants
to request it.
Well, like when the Rose shows in France where—
She will still take it on.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long have you been at Vogue?
Honestly, I think it's been around 6.5 years.
Wow.
6.5 years. I started in 2017. And I was a freelance jewelry assistant, just trying to do any and everything to stand out and just, you know, be on the ground at Vogue. And it's been such a journey.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I know that you had something very, very difficult happen to you and challenging happen to you while you've been working here. You know, I was really saddened to hear that you lost both your parents in a very short space of time. And I think that's something that we don't talk about so much, about how you handle grief with such a demanding job.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like for you?
You know, and it was during when I lost my mother, during that process, that was around the pandemic, thick of the pandemic, which was already another layer on top of everything. And so when she passed in like the beginning of September.
2020?
2020, yeah. I just had a very honest conversation with my boss, Virginia Smith, who I'm very, very thankful for. And, you know, she gave me the space to take a month off and to really just allow me to just think about what really happened and just let it resonate with myself and just have the time to grieve. Because during that time, I was, you know, doing the podcast full time, which was a full time job on top of my actual full time job. And then on top of being a full time caregiver to my mother, because my father had to work, you know, to keep insurance and just keep things, the lights on and keep the bills paid.
Wow. So you were at home in Florida,
I was
taking care of your mom, working remotely.
Mm-hmm.
So Virginia, once, but before she passed, you were doing all of those things at the same time. So also I can imagine that, I just remember when my dad died when I was really young, like my mom just got super sick, like, and afterward it was like,
wow,
she got the flu, she got, like, she just got all the things she hadn't had for a year of taking, it's like your body just finally gives up. So I feel like it's so nice that you were able to have just a few weeks afterward to sort of just get yourself back together.
Oh, I'm so thankful for that time, because also just the process of, like, planning a funeral, like, God bless, I have two older sisters and I had my dad at the time that we could, like, just congregate together and lean on each other during that time to, you know, just get through that process, that those initial 2 weeks, because that's the most difficult, I feel. But, you know, once my father passed, which was a shock for all of us, because it just kind of felt like, it just felt like we had the worst luck. And and I couldn't even imagine that it was actually happening. Like, I just felt like I was in another world, that maybe I was asleep. Maybe this was just a really bad dream. And he passed within 2 months of us finding out in the end of, it was around the end of August when we found out in 2021. So it was very soon, close.
That you found out that he was sick?
Yeah. Okay. And then he passed 2-3 months later.
Wow.
He passed the day after Halloween. But I know, because he is so stingy, and I know he was overhearing the nurse when he was in hospice saying she didn't believe he would make it through Halloween.
Aww.
And he did. And I was like, that was my dad's last hurrah. And I'm so thankful for that, because it is just him in all his essence, because he's always trying to prove everyone wrong and anything against him of what his will is. And so, you know, that process of losing my parents and trying to navigate such a demanding job was really hard. To be honest, I was very depressed for the last 3 years, and truly probably haven't seen much of the light till recently. It was hard to navigate this job that I was once so passionate about, but once losing my parents and having depression kick, I lost a lot of passion for everything.
Right.
And so it just felt like I was kind of starting from scratch. And once you kind of get that light back, it's easier, and you realize, oh no, this is what I'm meant to do, and there is purpose. Because just because my parents are not here physically, they're spiritually with me, and, you know, I'll take them coming to my dream once in a while, and that will be my one thing I can hold on to. But yeah, I like to just think, okay, if I can't make them proud physically while they're here, I can make them proud spiritually.
What were some of the things? Because, I mean, I think people always say it takes time and, you know, some people want to throw themselves into work.
Yeah.
Was it time? What helped you?
Yeah.
And
Because the grieving process looks so different for everyone. Yeah. I know some people who just immediately went back to work and that worked for them. Me, I needed the time. I think, one, it was making sure I communicated and took that time for myself, and also didn't put pressure on myself to do all the things that I was doing before my parents passed, and kind of eased myself back into it. And also just asking for help, leaning on people, leaning on my boyfriend, leaning on my sisters, leaning on my friends, something that I didn't really do before, that I still to this day struggle with, because it's hard to sometimes around grief, you don't want to be reminded of your grief. And when you speak to people about it, you could sense their sadness for you. And you're just already me, I'm very emotional and I can sense other people's emotions as well. So it's like double whammy of sadness. Right. So sometimes I'm just like, I don't even want to deal with it. I can handle it myself. And then I realize, no, I can't. And also just getting my body moving, exercising. Mm.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good note about just like taking on the sort of the codependence of worrying about someone else's reaction to you talking about your grief. Like, I feel like I still apologize mm-hmm. if I'm like, oh, my father died. And everyone's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, no, it's okay. It's okay. Yeah. It's like I'm compensating for making them uncomfortable with right. this thing that's okay. Like, it, you know, for me, it happened 25 years ago. Like, we're all, you know, can right. live together and talk about that. But it's kind of the same as when, I don't know, when we were talking about this with you, I was like, it's similar to being at work and a colleague is in the elevator and they're like, how are you today? And there's really no option other than to be like, good, I'm
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, there really isn't.
And it's kind of, it's a shame because sometimes it's nice to be like, honestly, like I just had a very frustrating subway ride yeah. and I was pissed about this and my mom called and she annoyed me about that. And you don't do it. Yeah. And I don't know. I just wonder, did you find that you were able to be honest at work about how you were feeling, or were you just sort of powering through in this sort of closed down, compartmentalized?
Yeah, honestly, I started just responding with the truth. If someone asked me how I was doing and I wasn't okay, I'll be like, honestly, I've seen better days, but I'm
and how do people react to that?
I think people appreciated the honesty because then they felt like it was a safe space for them to also be honest and be like, yeah, I'm not feeling great either. Mm. Because what I found was when I communicated and started really talking about the grief, not just with my safe haven of my boyfriend and my sisters and my friends, but with my colleagues and other people that I may have not known we had similarities, it was a part of the healing process too. It was a form of therapy within its own.
Right.
And it just created this space within my head of like, okay, no, everyone is going through their own process of grief too. A lot of people have experienced loss in some way or form. And we're not going to have the same exact experiences, but we can relate on a certain level field. And,
right.
you know, we could talk about things. And maybe at that day, that person can come to me and seek, I don't know, just common just hurt that then we could work through it together.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it created this safe space for me that I was like, you know what? I'm tired of just saying I'm okay. No, I'm going to be honest and say I'm not doing okay. And maybe that person can offer me help.
I always think you have such your ear to the ground when it comes to new designers, and you've been really good at championing BIPOC designers, and I see today you're wearing a Wales Bonner.
Me too.
Oh my gosh. I think we're all wearing black designers today. I'm wearing Martine Rose.
Oh my God, amazing.
I love this dress. This is a Wales Bonner dress I actually got when I was pregnant as like a pregnancy dress that then I could wear after, and 3 different people in the Vogue office have it, and we all look different in it. It's so funny. Me, Jesse, and Olivia Horner all, and I'm just waiting for the day where we all wear it the same day.
That is also the chicest pregnancy dress.
Yeah, but it's great because I hated buying stuff when I was pregnant that then I was going to just like yeah. throw away. It's and right. this was, it's hard to find those pieces that like you actually want to wear after.
Oh my God.
But anyway, I'm a big fan.
It's a great dress and it's a great shirt. So yeah, no, tell us about, you know, who you're following
yeah.
or why it's important to you.
Yeah, you know, I have... So there's so many incredible designers out there, but Fee Noel, I mean, she is an incredible, incredible designer. Mm-hmm. And she also just launched her new store in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to go out there. What's the store like?
I don't know about her.
Oh, you would love Fee.
She's incredible.
So much fun.
Great prints, great fabrics, just like beautiful flowing, just... You feel beautiful in her
okay.
clothing.
She's an American designer. She's based here. Okay.
Yeah, she's based here, based in New York, Brooklyn. I haven't been to the store yet, but I passed by it yesterday on my way to get my braids.
Where exactly is it?
It's in like kind of, I think it's like Crown Heights, Flatbush area.
Okay.
It's the Little Caribbean neighborhood. It's such a monumental moment in her career as a designer, and it's exciting
it's
to see
deal
someone.
To have a store.
And also in the neighborhood in which she grew up in. Yeah. So it's
oh, wow,
very special.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she started making all of her clothes in that in that neighborhood. She's a one woman show in many ways too. She was for a long time.
How do you spell Fanoel so I can Google it?
Yeah, of course. F E and then N O E L.
Okay.
And of course, another black woman designer. Her name is Sade Mims, another Brooklyn based designer.
Oh, I don't think I know her.
From EDOS. I don't know if you, she makes incredible accessories that are different than what you've ever seen.
EDAS is E-D-A-S.
Yes, E-D-A-S. She is one of the sweetest people.
Oh, because EDAS is Sade backwards.
Yeah.
There we go.
There you go.
Sneaky.
Oh, yes.
She started off with jewelry and has recently got, not recently, probably a few years, but has been in the bag game and just really killing it with what she's been doing. And then Bernard James, he is a black man who is a jewelry designer that makes the most insane jewelry. I mean, he came in recently and I tried on one of the tennis necklaces.
Ooh.
And in my head, I was like, oh, yeah, I could buy this. And then I was like, how much is this? And he was like, way above 20K. I was like, okay, let me put it back.
Wow. I love the idea of a tennis necklace for men.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is so chic.
He also is coming out with this. Hopefully I'm not releasing anything that's embargoed. But sorry, Bernard. This incredible tennis bracelet that goes from black diamonds down like in an ombre to white diamonds.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty. I want that.
Yeah.
I'm realizing that maybe people don't all know what a tennis bracelet or a tennis necklace are.
Sorry.
Can you give us a little background on that?
Yeah, just think about all the diamonds in one necklace.
Chris Evert chose to wear a diamond bracelet during her matches in 1978.
Okay.
And from then on, it became known as the tennis bracelet. But it's like a single one strand of all diamonds, usually a bracelet, but also a necklace. Yeah. It's, you know, same thing. And it's usually quite tight to the neck. Probably most popular in the 20s, no?
Yeah.
A sort of like a flapper jewelry.
Well, I'd love a tennis necklace.
Yeah. Me too.
Naomi is going to Japan for 2 weeks. I'm so jealous. Do you have like a list of fashion shopping places you're going to go in Japan?
Yes. I reached out to the Vogue Japan peeps.
Oh, what do they recommend?
I'll send it to you.
They have good resale.
Yes.
I would go to some of the consignment stores.
Yes.
That was
because my plan
really
is
great.
To shop.
Yeah.
I told
Blue, I'm like, 2 days, I'm shopping. We'll
great.
Figure out anything
and
else.
Blue's your boyfriend.
Blue is my boyfriend.
Well, how would you describe your style? Like, I'm sort of curious to know because you like to experiment.
Yeah.
Like, what are the core tenets of your style?
I think for me, I don't like to put myself within, like, a box of like what my style is because I truly, it changes every day of what I want to wear because like what I'm wearing today, even though at the base of it is my style with the mix of the patterns and the prints, it's still very more like lady than what I usually would wear. But
right. What makes it lady?
I think there's the length of the skirt.
But I feel lady.
It's also
can you describe?
Prada. So
yeah, Prada gives lady anytime.
Yeah.
Can you describe your outfit for audio listeners?
Yes, I am wearing this polka dot black and white Wales Bonner button-up shirt. And I have this red silk Prada skirt from, I'm forgetting which year, but it has a flower applique on the front.
And, just and like it's sort of, is it like a crop pencil skirt?
Yeah, it's like
vibe.
A cropped pencil skirt. And it's, I think with, I like to balance it out with just like the thong heel to kind of give it a little bit of height and just make it a little bit more like young and fun. But it's weird because recently I feel like I've been leaning more towards like minimal wear, like just wanting to
you
put
and
on
everyone
something.
Else.
Yeah,
I know. And it's so odd because I'm usually just like constantly wearing the brightest colors and pattern mixing. And I think it just really fluctuates with how I'm feeling and what I recently bought and what I'm just anxious to wear.
Yeah.
What are you anxious to wear? What have you bought recently?
So I'm in like vacation mode.
What are you buying for Japan?
Yeah, tell us. Yeah, what are you gonna
pack? Japan, I'm not gonna buy anything for it because I know I'm going to buy everything. But I have to go, not half, but I'm going to Jamaica for my friend's bachelorette in next weekend.
Fun.
And so, like, it's all, like, Nia Thomas crochet dress. I want all the Diotima crystal embellished.
Diotima is a Jamaican designer, so it would be very,
it's perfect.
Very perfect for
that. I don't know Diotima.
Oh, my God.
She's one of the CVFF CFDA Vogue Fashion Fund finalists. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Diotima.
Yeah.
Are there any summer trends that you're kind of into, not into, hate to see, love to see,
so
annoying to you?
Honestly, I've been leaning back into, and I hate that you have to call them Bermuda shorts because it brings you back to just
to
like
do,
middle school, but like, they're kind of fun to wear. You just need them to be very oversized.
Right.
Oversized. That's the key. Either super low waist or high waisted and oversized. Like, you can't really do that mid waist or you're bringing it back to middle school. but that's what I've been leaning into. I love the idea of people just wearing to like the socks and the sandal heels.
Yeah.
I haven't quite nailed that down because I am like completely falling out of the heels in my socks.
You don't want to be like Chomo with her Mary Janes at 4 years old?
I mean, honestly, I would definitely want to be because
it's very Miu Miu, Chomo.
It is very Miu. She's ahead of her time.
Where do you find new designers like the ones we were talking about? Like, where do you...
Yeah.
Is it people reaching out to you? Are you finding them online? Are you Instagram, TikTok?
It's a mix of it all. TikTok has been a great resource because it just really, the algorithm is insane and it'll just pop up on my For You page.
Mine is just not doing.
You gotta.
What do I need to do?
Interact with it. You have to like the videos that you like and search. They look at your
maybe
searches.
I like the wrong thing.
Instagram's great. You know, Albert does that amazing Up Next Designer page. Yeah,
Albert IL.
Yes, A Y A L. Does Up Next Designer, which is a great resource for a lot of people. And people who are just adjacent to fashion love to follow that page too and see what they're kind of seeing what's up next. And, you know, word of mouth, people who email me, people who come to the office to do a desk side, which is essentially them coming to meet either in a conference room or in the lobby of our
floor. It's never actually at a desk.
It's not at the desk. It once was, but
I
now...
I wondered that. Was it? I guess people would, when people had offices.
I think it was before my time when it was, like, actually at your desk, but... people now, we just do it in a conference room or we do it within the lobby of our building. And, you know, it's a great way to just have like 20, 30 minutes with a designer. And
it's a very Willy Loman-y thing. Yeah. Like, they come with their wares, they sprue them out, and then you get to sort of get a...
Yeah, and it feels casual. And it feels just like you're able to connect with them in a different way that's not Zoom or over email, you know. It's more personable.
Oh, where do you love to shop?
Oh, my God. I love to shop. Okay, so I don't really shop in person anymore. I feel like it's been very hard for that.
That's why Japan will be so fun.
Japan will be amazing. But I love to check Poshmark, which is so funny.
I get overwhelmed by Poshmark.
You have to know what you're looking for.
Right.
You have to be like, okay, I'm looking for this obscure Margiela tabby boot. Maybe I'll find it on Poshmark, which you may actually find.
Okay.
And I like Depop
sometimes.
How many
tabbies do you have?
I have, I think, 11 pairs.
Oh, my God. Can you describe a tabby?
Oh, yes. So a tabby is
11 pairs?
That's hilarious.
It's so crazy, but I want more. so a tabby is essentially like, what do you, like, you know, like on a horse, like a hoof. It's that in a boot form or you could do it in a sandal. You could do it in a flat. I'm probably not even describing this well, but it sounds so much. It looks better than it sounds, basically what I'm trying to say.
It's a very, very recognizable Margiela shoe that they've now have in every single possible iteration. It started as a boot.
I think originally it was started in Japan.
Right.
Yes.
It's a shoe, but instead of it just being a normal toe, there is an indent for the big toe.
The
big toe is split. So it's sort of like mittens versus gloves if it was just a thumb. It's
like a hoof. Yeah.
Thank you.
What I'm like coveting right now is the crystal Margiela tabby pumps.
Ooh, they sound cute.
Oh my God.
Those are like from their fall collection.
Wow.
I've been like hounding the website trying to see if it's out yet, because I just, one, not even close to getting married yet, but that's what I want to be.
Oh, yeah,
my wedding
shoe. Wedding shoe, and yeah, probably comfortable. Yeah. What else do you collect? Like, what do you kind of collect?
What else do you have 11 of?
Yeah. It's basically what I'm asking.
Honestly, I have a lot of Christopher John Rogers. He's a good friend of mine, but also I love his clothing.
Yeah, you wear his clothes so well.
Thank you. I have one of his most iconic pieces, the boob dress, which has...
What is the boob dress?
I love the boob dress. Yeah, I know which one that is.
So good. To kind of describe it for you all, it is a knit long dress. It has cap, like kind of short sleeves on it. It's striped down the whole thing. But on the chest area, you have this other... like another pattern. It kind of is like
a circular
bullseye.
Yeah,
like circular, a circular pattern,
yeah,
on the
like
breast.
A bullseye,
yeah,
you're right.
And it's just a fun dress to wear.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's very playful.
Yeah. I love bags. I really do love. I'm like, to my core, I really am an accessories girl because
sounds
I
like
love
it. I'm like, if yeah, you have a pair of tabbies.
I know. I remember when I first bought my pair of tabbies and I had a gift card, and it's still like, I felt like it was still so expensive, and I asked like all my friends on Instagram, I'm like, should I do it, should I make the plunge? And now I'm like, all right, we're gonna just swipe the card and we're getting this one.
Naomi, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been such
coming
a pleasure.
It's been
to
so
have
much
you
fun
on.
That's it for this episode of The Run Through
of Vogue is a production of Condé Nast Entertainment.
The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns. It's engineered by Jake Loomis, Gabe Quiroga, and Kevin Bourassa, and mixed by Mike Kutchman.
See you soon.
Bye.
Hi, we're Carlene and Jill, hosts of Breaking Beauty Podcast, the show all about the breakthrough people, products, and moments in beauty.
On our show, you're going to find hella inspiring guests like Emily Weiss of Glossier,
and you'll get beauty tips galore from the top pros in the industry, like Kim Kardashian's makeup guru, and you'll hear skincare secrets from the likes of Dr. Pimple Popper.
Plus, you'll get shopping help with our Damn Goods episodes, where we review the latest products hitting store shelves to let you know what's actually worth your money.
Listen every Wednesday to Breaking Beauty Podcast.